This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The therapeutic use of cannabis has been legal in New Hampshire for about 2 years now, but the drug still isn't legally available in the state. Providers, known as alternative treatment centers, have been selected, and plans are also underway for cultivation facilities around the state, but their opening is estimated for no sooner than early 2016. Meanwhile, those who hope to at least receive an ID card verifying their health condition for medical marijuana use have been told not quite yet. While many praise the state for this careful approach, others suffering from conditions they hope to treat with the drug are becoming increasingly impatient. Today in The Exchange, medical marijuana's long road in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With us in studio is John Martin. He's manager at the Department of Health and Human Services Bureau of Licensing and Certification. And John Martin, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Very nice to be here.
Also with us, Dave Solomon, reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. He's been covering this story. Dave, welcome back.
Thanks, Laura.
And joining us by phone, John Reagan, Republican Senator from Deerfield and a sponsor of the original medical marijuana bill. And Senator Reagan, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for the invitation.
Well, lots and lots of detail to get through, gentlemen. But just first off, John Martin, can you broadly describe where we're at with this process? Because a lot of people say it's been kind of slow.
I would say it's been deliberate. We've wanted to make sure that we do it right. It's not going to be to anyone's benefit if the program failed to launch because we didn't do it right, or collapsed shortly after implementation because we didn't do it right. But I'm happy to say we are getting very close to the implementation of this particular program. We've accomplished a great deal. We've established the DHHS Therapeutic Cannabis website. We've adopted the Therapeutic Cannabis Registry rules. We've adopted the Alternative Center, Alternative Treatment Center rules. We've drafted and released the request for applications. We've reviewed the applications. We've selected the three entities that will operate the four alternative treatment centers. They've submitted applications for a registration certificate. Right now, they've selected the geographic locations where the dispensaries will be located and where the cultivation sites will be located. We've held public input meetings in the towns where the dispensaries and the cultivation sites will be located. We have one more of those to do. Currently, we're working on a number of different things. We're working on the actual process for accepting and processing applications, issuing the cards. We're developing all the forms that we're going to use for this particular process. So getting everything in place that we'll need once we start accepting applications for registry cards.
There's a lot of rules and regulations around this, it sounds like, that need to be written.
Absolutely. And the thing is, it has taken quite a bit of time because it's a new program. It's something we've never had in the state before. As I said before, we wanted to make sure that we do it right. We had the two rules that we needed to develop. One was for the registry. One was for the alternative treatment centers. And what we did before we even started drafting the first word of those, we did a ton of research because there are 23 other states that have therapeutic cannabis programs. So we didn't need to reinvent the wheel. So before we did any drafting, we got copies of all of the statutes used by the other states, all of the rules used by the other states. We went through them with a fine-tooth comb because there were things that you know, for example, things that we like that Connecticut's doing, things that we like that Massachusetts is doing, and so on. So we went through those very carefully. We had conference calls with most of the other states that have therapeutic cannabis programs to learn from their experience.
Wow, that's a lot of calls, 23 other states.
We didn't call all of them, but many of them, and got a, you know, just a ton of really good, helpful information. We also have a listserv, so we've been sending out questions as we go along, soliciting input. And you know, all this was happening before we even began developing the rules. And as a consequence of that, we have two very comprehensive rules, and people who have, you know, are familiar with the rules used by the various states will tell you that New Hampshire's are some of the very best.
Well, and we'll definitely get into this hour, the cultivation centers, the dispensaries, where they're going to be located, how they've been located. I'll be also interested to hear a little bit later, John Martin, what worked in other states and what didn't. But Dave, to bring you in, you've been talking to people involved in this process, including critics. What are you hearing?
Well, there's two major concerns. One is the length of time that it has taken for the program to begin to get traction. I don't think any of the legislative sponsors anticipated in 2013 when the law was passed that it would be 2016 and fairly late into 2016 before the program was actually in play. So certainly the capacity for the state to meet many of the deadlines that have been set for the process has been a concern. And there has been a lot of complaining by the unsuccessful bidders for alternative treatment center licenses. I believe there, when the requests for applications went out, the department got at least 14 viable applications, of which three were selected to operate in the four regions of the state. And so you have a lot of unhappy bidders, a couple, at least one or two of which have filed formal appeals and are questioning really the fairness of the process by which the three successful bidders were chosen.
How common is that, though, Dave? I mean, there's a big state contract up for grabs. Somebody's going to get it. Somebody isn't. I mean,
it's extremely common.
Yeah.
Almost.
People are upset when they are not chosen.
There's no shortage of unsuccessful bidders with appeals and even lawsuits pending on those issues. But in this whether the number of appeals is uncharacteristically large in this case, I'm not sure. But they're extremely vocal, and we can talk about some of the issues they've raised.
Well, and Senator Reagan, what do you see going on with this? You were one of the original sponsors, as I said.
Okay, just to get a little perspective here. I voted in favor of this therapeutic use of cannabis five times, and finally in 2013 we got a bill passed that was signed by the governor. So this allows us to go forward to this. The history of cannabis in healthcare is up till 1937 in the United States, virtually every pharmacy and every doctor in the United States prescribed and sold cannabis for medical purposes. And then for some reason it became the object of concern by certain Congress people who didn't want certain people selling the product. So they got it outlawed, and they seized all the records of the pharmacies, and they were all destroyed, and now everybody lost just, you know, a million cases of people that were being successfully helped and by what and how much they took. So we lost all of that.
The data now, that would tell us how to use this therapeutically. Go ahead, Senator Reagan.
Right. So now what we're into now is we're into the research phase around the country where many people saw the report on television of the little girl that was suffering 300 seizures a week, who the family moved to Colorado. They found these five brothers who were growing cannabis, and they gave her what the strain of cannabis that she believed would be helpful, one dose, and the little girl didn't have a seizure for 30 hours. And so she called them back, and they said, okay, we'll propagate this as fast as we can for your daughter. So this is the kind of thing that will lead to re-acceptance by the medical community. Of course, all the doctors that up till 1937, of course, they're long gone, so we can't go to them for what they did, but we're going to reinvent all of the positive research related to the use of cannabis.
And Senator Reagan, if I may ask, do you have a personal interest in this?
A lot of people in Concord, anyway, knew my late wife, and she suffered greatly with sarcoma, and she died in 2012. And she was amazingly, she was so loyal to her one of her clients, the chiefs of police, that we couldn't even get her to even try it for relief of pain. So she said, "No, I can't do that. I can't not be faithful to my clients." So my mother, you know, two decades ago, my sister got her something to smoke, and she tried it, and she said, "You know, this is the best I've felt in 5 years." And so my sister said, "Well, do you want me to contact the kid down the street to get more?" And my mother said, "No, I'm afraid, you know, that would bring the police to the house." So it's just so sad that something that's proven to be so successful has been vilified by mostly by the DEA and then the chiefs of police in New Hampshire. But it's denying a great deal of relief to very, very sick people.
Well, Senator Reagan, I'm sorry to hear about your wife. And I remember you telling me that story before.
Right.
And I think that as we move forward, you know, people might be calling on you to relate that experience again and, you know, what you think might have been made different. It does relate to another question I had for you, Senator Reagan. Matt Simon, who you know, a well-known advocate for this cause, has written that, quote, failure comes as no great surprise due to heavy compromise in the state Senate. Do you agree with that, Senator Reagan, that the Senate made this bill a lot tougher than it needed to be, and that's why the process is so slow? I'd love to hear from you both as someone who has personal concerns and also as a senator.
I've noticed in the Senate that it doesn't take but one senator to skew the conversation in the Senate. In the House, it's, you know, prevailing wisdom out of the 400, but of the 24 in the Senate, it's very easy for one person, especially on the floor, when everybody's looking to sway opinion and then to get people to take the softer route. So that doesn't give you always the best quality, but it, in this case, it gave us a path to get this product to the very sick people.
Well, and John Martin, to you, you know, as the person who has to make this thing happen at Health and Human Services, what might have made the legislation easier for you to work with, if anything? Is there anything in this bill that's made your job tougher?
I think some of it's a little bit kind of ambiguous. Some things could have been a little bit more specific, could have given greater, I think, guidance to us in terms of what the intent was, particularly around things like the public input process. It wasn't really clear exactly how that was to play out, what was intended by that. But there's also, you know, some very good things about this particular statute. One of the things that I think was very wise on the part of the legislature was that they kept it narrowly tailored. And so that made it, you know, easier for us to work with. I think the idea being that it's easier to expand a program than it is to contract a program. And, you know, looking at the experience of some of the other states, I think that's really very true. So I think we have it narrowly tailored now in terms of, you know, who qualifies for therapeutic cannabis, with the idea that as we learn more, as this plays out, you know, we can expand it as appropriate.
Okay. And Dave, do you want to jump in?
Well, one area where lack of clarity in the legislation appears to have certainly affected the application process is the question of whether the applicants were supposed to have a facility lined up.
In advance.
In advance, as opposed to saying, well, pick me and then I'll find a place. And it appears that the lawmakers, and Senator can speak to this, had anticipated opposition to siting was going to be a critical factor So you're probably going to want to have that duck in a row first, although it gave an out. It said facility, you know, then if available. So instead of taking the premise that we probably ought to make sure they have a facility, although we can make exceptions if they don't, the rules appear to have been written by DHHS to say, let's just pick the applicants and we'll deal with facility issues later, which critics say has really prolonged the process because now we're just beginning site selection in some of the areas, and that is a long and contentious process.
Well, I definitely want to talk to all of you about site selection, where these facilities might go, which might be cultivation, which might be dispensary, how the towns are reacting. And in a few minutes, we'll actually hear from someone in Merrimack, a town that is slated to host a dispensary. Let me also invite you, remind you that you can join us, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. This hour on The Exchange, we're getting an update on New Hampshire's medical marijuana law, where it is in this process of being put in place. Is a cultivation facility or dispensary coming to your town? What are your thoughts about it? Are you or a loved one waiting on the program to get running in order to access medical marijuana? And also, just in general, how do you feel about the way this program has been put into place so far? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter as well. And John Martin, go ahead. Your thoughts on the siting, where these facilities go.
Yeah, I'd just like to mention the fact that the statute does not require them to, or did not require them to, have a specific site at the time that they applied. In fact, it specifically stated that the applicants had to provide the proposed physical address of the alternative treatment center if a precise address has been determined, or if not, the general location where it would be located. And it's important to note that with many of the applicants, they weren't just applying for one geographic area. They were applying for multiple geographic areas. In some cases, they were applying for all four. And so they really couldn't invest a lot of, you know, time, energy, and resources into finding a specific location until they knew, A, am I going to be one of the selected entities, and B, what geographic area am I going to receive? And so that did delay our ability to do the public input process, because we really couldn't start that process until we had a pretty good sense as to where the cultivation sites and the dispensaries were going to be located. And I mean, if we'd started the process at the time that the entities applied to become alternative treatment centers, we wouldn't have had an idea. I mean, it could have been in any town or city in that geographic area. So we would have been doing conceivably, you know, scores of public input meetings, which really we didn't have the resources to do, and it wouldn't be helpful to the public. Because how could they comment? Right. How could they comment if they didn't know whether their city or town was going to be a site of one of the cultivation sites or the dispensaries?
Well, and I am curious about the public input process, and want to hear from everybody on this, but John, you first. So what does that mean, public input process? Let's say, you know, Concord is chosen, which, as I understand it, it wasn't. But if Concord were chosen, what would be the input of the residents of Concord in that process? Would they be able to say, yes, we want this, no, we don't? Would they be able to say, okay, if we have to have it, you know, please don't put it near a school. Please improve the lighting. I mean, what is that public input?
Well, we've had a number of meetings now, these public input meetings. They've taken place so far in Merrimack, Lebanon, Plymouth, Manchester, Peterborough, and Rochester. And I've attended all of them. I think they've been really excellent substantive meetings. And one of the advantages of doing it now is we have selected the entity, so it's a chance for the public to actually meet the personnel from the entities that will be running the alternative treatment centers, an opportunity for them to ask questions and get information directly from the source. And you know, the public has asked a lot of really great questions. They've wanted to know things like what security measures are going to be in place at the dispensary and the cultivation site. What inventory control measures are you going to have to ensure there isn't diversion? What types of products are you going to make? Are you going to make edible products? How are they going to be packaged? Are you going to package them in a way that they won't be an attractive nuisance to children, for instance? So they've really been substantively excellent, and having the alternative treatment centers there to provide information has been really helpful.
All right, and coming up, we'll talk to a town manager at one of those towns. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at the medical marijuana program here in New Hampshire, passed about 2 years ago, but still not really in place yet, although, as we're hearing, a lot of moving parts are falling into place. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Your questions and comments about how this program is working, what the final vision might look like, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With me are three people who have been looking at this issue for a long time. John Reagan, Republican senator from Deerfield and a sponsor of the medical marijuana bill. Also with us, Dave Solomon, reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. And John Martin, manager at the Department of Health and Human Services Bureau of Licensing and Certification. And gentlemen, joining us now on the phone is Tim Thompson. He's Community Development Director for Merrimack, a town that will host a dispensary. And Tim Thompson, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura. Glad to be on.
So what sorts of questions do you, in your role as a Community Development Director, have to look at when it comes to hosting a medical marijuana dispensary? This is brand new for the state.
It certainly is. And for Merrimack, what we undertook was We took a look at our zoning ordinance to determine if we did nothing, how would we have to treat an application should an alternative treatment center want to locate in Merrimack. And what we found was we would have to have treated these in a similar manner as a retail pharmacy, which would have been able to be located in a variety of commercial and industrial districts in town. So what the town decided to do through the town council and the planning board was to propose some zoning amendments to specifically define what an alternative treatment center is and to set up a process by which the planning board would have an opportunity through a conditional use permit process to give these types of uses a little bit of extra scrutiny as they go through the planning board process for approval.
What kind of extra scrutiny, Tim?
What we tried to do was mimic a lot of the requirements that are in the state law. We also did some research from some of the other communities that are a little ahead of us in the game in terms of what they used for ordinance language. So we borrowed heavily from communities like Concord, Dover, and Laconia in developing our ordinance. But essentially, our criteria deal with making sure that they're not in a pre-existing drug-free school zone, making sure that they have proper disposal of the remnants and byproducts, making sure that we have a detailed security plan that is thoroughly reviewed and approved by our police department, prohibiting the use of cannabis on the property, and making sure that the facilities are in a location that's proper and appropriate. So Merrimack has now adopted regulations that would allow these in our commercial and industrial districts, but would need we would need the additional step of a conditional use permit in addition to the usual site plan review that an application would typically have to go through.
So you mentioned police, and I'll ask you about that, Tim. What kind of safety concerns do they have?
In Merrimack, really, it's the secondary usage. I think there's concern that the diversion of product, I think, is the primary concern of our public safety officials. From what we've been able to do, we before we had the public input session and before we had even started the zoning amendment process, had a meeting with the folks from Prime ATC, who's the facility that's looking at Merrimack, met with their staff, met with their security people, get people into contact with each other, and really open the lines of communication so that the expectations are well set before the process really starts for the specific location. And I believe our police chief and some of his staff are going to actually visit a facility that Prime runs in Connecticut so they can meet with the police down there, find out what types of issues and concerns that they've had, and to understand the experience that Connecticut has had with this.
What have you heard from residents, if anything, Tim, about this?
Pretty interestingly, I expected quite a bit of public input during our public hearing process, both with the planning board and the town council. We did have a number of people attend both public hearings. However, we did not receive a single piece of public input once the public hearings were open for input at either the planning board or the council.
So you were expecting more worry, more concern, and you didn't get that.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 18 years. I've dealt with a variety of different controversial uses and different things throughout my career. Anytime you have a type of use that's brand new, something the state is establishing, I always anticipate either one thing or the other. It's either going to be a lot of opposition and contentious public hearings, or as we saw, very little public input and something that goes through without much discussion.
Wow. And last question for you, Tim. Did Merrimack get asked, do you want to host this, or were you told, congratulations, you've been chosen?
The perspective and the position that the town has taken, both through the council and the town manager, is that because of the way New Hampshire law functions, we're all creatures of the state as municipalities. The policy decisions regarding the legalization of cannabis and the alternatives treatment center process was settled through the legislative process. We just wanted to make sure that should we be selected, we were in a position to be comfortable with that type of facility being located here.
Tim Thompson, anything else that you think people should know, especially in other towns that have been chosen for dispensaries or cultivation centers, might want to think about?
I would certainly encourage the local officials to meet up front before you get too deep into the details of a specific location. Meet with the providers, get the lines of communication open, make sure that your police and public safety personnel are familiar with them. And really, I think open communication and transparency is the best process for any type of planning and zoning decision, especially in this type of situation.
All right. Tim Thompson, real interesting. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
That's Tim Thompson, Community Development Director for Merrimack, a town that will be hosting a dispensary. Again, today in the Exchange, we're looking at medical marijuana, how this plan is being put in place, how this system is getting up and running, although not yet. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, Senator Reagan, I did want to ask you, we heard from Tim Thompson, no opposition in Merrimack. What if a town that was chosen did say, no, we don't want this, it doesn't fit our town? Would that town have any recourse?
We have a long history in New Hampshire of having a public hearing on every question, that everything we do is is done in public. So I don't know why you would, why the prevailing public opinion wouldn't prevail with the planning board or the select board, or whatever town government, if there was a public outcry against it. So that's why we do it, and that's usually the result, is that the public's opinion usually prevails.
What do you think about this, Dave? As Tim told us, it's brand new, or at least after to 1937, as Senator Reagan said earlier, the fact that there hasn't been a huge hue and cry over this, at least not yet.
Well, public opinion, as Senator Reagan points out, usually prevails, except we do operate under the rule of law. So if a town has a zone and land use regulations that allow for this kind of pharmaceutical license and the applicant meets all the requirements, philosophical opposition alone usually isn't sufficient to block this kind of development or any other. But it doesn't surprise me that opposition is muted. I do recall from the coverage of the hearings in Merrimack some people making statements to the effect that this belongs in Nashua, or suggesting that these should not be located in the more suburban communities. So I don't think it was exactly welcomed with open arms. But no, people didn't show up with torches and pitchforks like some people might have thought. But I think that it's somewhere more in the middle.
Again, our number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go first to Mark in Hooksett. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Two points I'd like to make, or questions I'd like to ask as well. I understand that the DHHS essentially had no budget in order to set this whole program up. So I think they can only be, they can't really be faulted for the amount of time that it's taken. But that said, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, reciprocity has been built into the whole legalization of this in the state. So there really was no reason that I know of for medical cards not to be issued and then allow patients to go into neighboring states in order to obtain their medication. In my opinion, this has been quote-unquote illegal for the last 2 years. People have still been suffering because they haven't been able to get their hands on their medication in order to treat the ailment they've got.
You know, Mark, this is an important point, and we've talked a lot so far about dispensaries, cultivation centers, individual towns. He's talking about the ID cards, John Martin, and what is the status there?
Well, up to now, we've not issued registry cards. We made our position very clear early on that we would not be issuing registry cards until there was a legal source of therapeutic cannabis in the state of New Hampshire.
In New Hampshire, even though Vermont, Maine, Massachusetts
have it. It's important to remember that even though these other states have programs, they don't allow people from other states to come in and purchase in their state. Typically, the way reciprocity works is, for example, if you're an out-of-state patient that has a card issued by another state, you can come into New Hampshire possessing therapeutic cannabis if you have your card. You cannot purchase therapeutic cannabis from an alternative treatment center in New Hampshire. And that's generally true of all of the other states as far as I know.
They don't have reciprocity with each other?
Not in terms of being able to come in and purchase. Now, I know the state of Maine has a very limited exception to that where they will allow an out-of-state patient to purchase, but only if they're actually in the state for an extended period of time. So they don't allow someone from New Hampshire to cross the state border, purchase cannabis, and go back to New Hampshire. But if you're a student who has a card and you're going to be studying for a semester in Maine, or if you have a summer home in Maine, then they do allow you to purchase in Maine. But most other states don't even have that. So our feeling was we could not issue the registry cards until such time as the alternative treatment centers were up and dispensing. Now, what we are planning to do, we've put in a proposed amendment to our rules that would allow us to do a pre-registration. And so the way that's going to work is, you know, sometime next month we're going to make the forms, the application forms, available to potentially qualifying patients and caregivers, and we'll allow them to apply for a registry card. That'll give us time to process the applications, get the cards ready to issue, so that once the alternative treatment centers are ready to dispense, we can get those cards out. It'll just make for a much more efficient process.
Senator Reagan, to you too, lots of frustration as we're hearing from our caller.
Yes.
Mark, you know, someone qualifies and they can't go to Vermont, for example, while they're waiting to get that card, that ID card.
The problem with the card is it has a limited it has an expiration date, and the concern of the Attorney General's office was if you issue the card prematurely, it will expire, you know, shortly after the people are even able to use it, and then it'll have to be reissued. And the Attorney General also opined that how can you issue a card for something that's not legally sold in the state?
In the state, even though it's available right over state lines.
Right, right.
Or so, could potentially be available.
Right. So law enforcement's been generally hostile to very sick people.
You know, and to Mark's other point, Senator Reagan, you know, he said you can't really blame DHHS for going slow on this. This is an agency that has been cut and cut and cut again. According to the Concord Monitor, more than 12% of the agency's positions are unfilled. How connected are those cuts to the department with this process that you and others want to see accelerated? Can you draw a line there or not?
Well, this is another thing that happened. When the law was passed, the commissioner, Commissioner Tumpas, went to the legal department and said, you know, now we have to formulate rules for this, and normally I would just hire an attorney to go ahead and make all these hundreds of phone calls and develop the rules, but we have no money to do that. Can the legal department, can you help us out here? And then pretty much on a volunteer basis, the attorneys who write rules in the department worked on this, came in early, stayed late, worked through their lunch hours, you know, took work home, and got these rules done pretty rapidly for the complications involved. So my hat is off to the effort that they made to get the rules done.
Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Mark, thanks for that call. And up next from Fremont is Dennis. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I was a person who made the original dispensary proposal in Epping last November, and I just wanted to just give you some details that happened there because they're very relevant to the discussion today. Basically, you know, I went in there, and this was before the request for applications was even issued, so we didn't really know what the scoring criteria would be, but I felt that it would be important to have a facility lined up beforehand. So basically, what I did was I went in and submitted a proposal to the selectmen, and but things didn't go well from the beginning. Somehow the media found out about the building that we were looking at, and I got a call almost maybe within 24 hours from a reporter asking me questions, and he started knocking on doors around the neighborhood. And I went to the selectmen's hearing. Now, it's important to remember that the selectmen's hearing wasn't required. I wanted to do that up front because I didn't want to get into the process and get and go to the actual planning board meeting and have that be the only public input. I felt that that would backfire on us. So I volunteered to have the selectman hearing. But at the selectman hearing, I hit a brick wall. I was accused of being a profiteer. It was really kind of shameful. And you know, what that showed, to me at least, was that the public acceptance wasn't there yet. And if you look, if you think back now, there was probably 20 groups that were vying to be applicants. They would have been all over the state in every town. It would have been kind of a zoo having all these proposals flying around and every town having to deal with it. And the risk was that there would have been a backlash against it in general with restrictive ordinance being putting in one after another. So ultimately, the RFA came out and showed a limited weight for having a property up front. I felt that was a good idea in retrospect because now the acceptance has moved so much more forward. And as we see in the public hearings, one after another, the towns have been much more receptive than Epping was.
Yeah, interesting, Dennis. And thank you for calling. And this, again, Senator Reagan gets to this point about the towns that are picked and how they feel about this. What do you make of Dennis's comment and his experience, Senator Reagan?
It was to be expected. I mean, we see that everywhere, that people, the NIMBY people, they don't want anything in their backyard. So you're always going to find a vocal group to oppose anything. So any kind of facility gets some number of people in that oppose it. So that it's to be expected. But as Dave pointed out, there were no burning torches and pitchforks at any of the hearings. And so people generally have been acceptable if they've had a sick person in their house. And, you know, we're in a generation now where we have a lot of adults who live in these towns who were actual recreational users. So it has a great deal of public experience. So, you know, most people recognize that we haven't had anyone die from an overdose of marijuana. So it's perceived as harmless as compared to hard drugs. And it just has that kind of acceptance.
Dave Solomon, you want to jump in real quick?
Well, I think Dennis makes a valid point that it may or may not have been advisable that the process be structured so that you started with a place or you look for the place afterwards. But what some of the unsuccessful bidders are claiming is that that was not made clear, that the claim in at least one appeal is that some of the bidders apparently knew that they could come up with the location later, and the rest of us suckers invested a lot of time and money in making sure we had one. So that is not a level playing field, and the deadlines have been adjusted over time as well.
Dennis, thank you for the call. More of your calls, questions, comments after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking once again at New Hampshire's medical marijuana law, passed about 2 years ago, but still the substance itself is not legally available in the state. We're looking at this whole process, the dispensaries, the cultivation centers, the ID cards, and we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.com. www.cannabisinsight.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. A couple emails have come in, all of you, and here's one from Angie in Plymouth. She says, the dispensary in Plymouth is supposed to serve the North Country. One of the criteria was that there be a Walmart, which means a population center to draw from. She says, the only thing that Plymouth has that the other towns do not have is a college. All the rest of the towns are much farther from Plymouth than the closest town with a Walmart. Something else that needs to be considered when transporting customers is that they will have to travel through Franconia Notch, which is not the kindest section of road in inclement weather. What kind of decision is this? And Senator Reagan, I know there was some concern in Plymouth about the fact that there was a college, and the concerns we talked about earlier about diversion were especially salient in a college town. I wonder what you think, Senator Reagan.
This is kind of a red herring argument. I mean, students at a college, of course, might use marijuana recreationally, but they're not going to have letters of recommendation from their doctors to go to the dispensary to buy product at the dispensary. They'll probably just continue to buy it on campus like they do now. We're concerned with the very sick people who have a medical need to use cannabis. And the fact that a college town exists in proximity to a treatment center, it's not even arguable. There's nothing to talk about there. One doesn't lead to the other.
Our caller earlier also mentioned that when he started his attempt to get one of these, to get approved to run a dispensary, he was accused of being a profiteer. From what I understand, Senator Reagan, these dispensaries and cultivation centers are all nonprofits. Is that right?
They are. It became a requirement in rules that they be organized as nonprofits. And the purpose of that was so that the Attorney General's office, who oversees nonprofits, would be able to scrutinize their records. And that was what that was all about. And then immediately we had a concern, it was from Concord, that meant that their properties would be tax exempt. So the day I heard that, I drafted legislation to make the treatment centers pay their share of local taxes in spite of their being nonprofits. So we resolved that issue.
Yeah, because Concord said, we've got enough non-taxable property within our city limits. Don't give us another one.
Right.
All right. Here's some emails that have come in from people who do have some of these qualifying conditions or wish that their conditions qualified. Judy in Canterbury says, I have a very dear friend from Cheshire County. She was recently diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. She knows she only has months to live and is facing the future with great spirit. But she'll have a great need for cannabis at the end. Her fear is that if it isn't available, she'll have to rely on prescription opiates, which will limit her consciousness of what's going on around her. She needs the marijuana in order to be aware of and strengthened by the comfort of her children and friends. Please be aware of these very real stories. And for Pete's sake, hurry up. Judy, I'm very sorry to hear about your friend. And I wonder what you can say, John Martin, about the hurry up part.
Well, there are a couple of things that we are doing to speed up this process. As I talked a little bit about before, we are planning on a pre-registration process where people can apply early so that once the dispensaries are ready to begin dispensing, we'll be able to get those cards out quickly without delay. The other thing that we are proposing is changing the rules to allow us to issue conditional registration certificates to the alternative treatment centers. The way the law and the rules contemplate now is that the alternative treatment centers need to be ready completely before we could issue a registration certificate, meaning they'd have to have their cultivation site ready, they'd have to have their dispensary ready. So what we're proposing is allowing my department to issue a conditional registration certificate once the alternative treatment centers are ready to begin cultivating. So right now they've all selected their cultivation sites. They are working diligently to get everything in place that needs to be in place in the way of security and so on. Once they're ready to begin cultivating, they'll let us know so that we can go in, inspect them, and as long as their cultivation site is compliant with the rules, we'll go ahead and issue that conditional registration certificate. That way they can begin cultivating the therapeutic cannabis while they're continuing to get everything in place in their dispensary. And then once they're close to being ready to dispense, they can let us know. We'll go in, we'll inspect their dispensary, and then if that's compliant with the rules, we'll issue an unconditional registration allowing them to open for business.
And from what I understand, the cultivation center is linked to a particular dispensary. They're sort of connected to each other.
That is correct, yes.
And not, though, from what I've read, again, correct me if I'm wrong, not often in the same town. Like the cultivation center might be in Manchester and the dispensary might be in Merrimack.
That is correct. Under the statute, the...
Now, why is that?
Well, the alternative treatment centers had a choice under the statute. They could have one site for both cultivation and dispensing.
Which would seem to make more sense, right? It's very efficient. You don't have to worry about transportation. It's all right there.
Well, except that there's different needs for a cultivation site and a dispensary. So I think they needed to find a site that was, you know, appropriate for cultivation and a site that was appropriate for dispensing. And the three alternative treatment centers all determined that it was better for them to have a separate site. Now, under the statute and our rules, when we selected an alternative treatment center, they were selected for a specific geographic region. So their dispensary would need to be located in that geographic region. However, there's no requirement that the cultivation site be in that same geographic region. So in some cases it is, in some cases it's not.
And a cultivation site, you're growing something, you probably need more space than
exactly.
You do at a dispensary.
That's
where
exactly
you're just
right.
Selling something.
Yes, particularly the space issue, because it does take a lot of space to grow therapeutic cannabis.
Well, Judy, thank you for the email. And again, I'm sorry about your friend. Let's go next to Portsmouth. Jack is on the air. Welcome, Jack. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Good. I was just really more interested in the fact that New Hampshire has taken the step of not allowing patients with PTSD to be a qualifying condition. And I really think those are the people that, I mean, these are typically people who are servicemen and women. They went abroad for our country, and then they come back, and without being terminally ill, New Hampshire is saying that they're going to not be able to receive medication, and it's just baffling to me. Most of the other states have PTSD as obviously a qualifying condition, and it's one of those areas.
Yeah, this is definitely an issue that's come up. Senator Reagan, why isn't PTSD on the list of qualifying conditions?
Well, here's the thing where one person with a veterans organization had an unfair amount of leverage and input and stated that he thought it was a bad thing for a depressed veteran suffering from PTSD to have cannabis. In the meantime, though, we've had this for years from when we drafted the qualifying conditions to now, but we now have a lot of research that shows that it is correct that the use of cannabis improves the mental well-being of people suffering from PTSD. So these are the kind of things where the doctors are going to decide what the best use is, and because they're going to hear from people that tried it and said, you know, this improved my condition for this or this didn't. So I felt that originally in the law it was anything a doctor recommended it for would be okay, but people insisted that we place all these restrictions on it. I don't know if they don't trust their own doctors or what the problem was.
Well, and Dave, this is why New Hampshire's law is often called very narrowly or tightly drawn.
Right. There are some of the most aggressive supporters of therapeutic cannabis who just feel the state has limped into this in a very half-hearted way. It sort of wants to have therapeutic cannabis, but it's conflicted about it. So we see a much narrower range of qualifying conditions than in some of the other states, a reluctance of the state to allow a home grow option that we've seen in other states, issuance of the cards prior to the opening of the centers within the state, a very conservative approach to the timing of the program, accessibility, and the range of conditions.
Here's an email that has come in from Elizabeth, who says, I prefer medical marijuana to opiates. I suffer from qualifying ailments, including Crohn's disease, and symptoms that include extreme pain. I suffer from symptoms I can completely control with medical marijuana. She says, as a result, I require more narcotics and longer periods of care as a result because medical marijuana is not yet available. She says, when I leave the hospital, I must come down off some nasty drugs. This painful process can be eased with medical marijuana. A couple questions for your guests, she says. When New Hampshire gets its act together and complies with its own law, will access continue to be impossible in the hospitals due to the federal funds involved? Have any states worked a way around this? Are there private hospitals that accept private insurance that provide services while allowing patients to take preferred medication? What about nursing homes? And so this is a good question. She says she suffers from this. Medical marijuana helps. But then when she's hospitalized, she can't get the drug that's helping her. John, do you know anything about this? This is a very tricky question.
Well, and we know that there are going to be complications around accessing this for some people. I mean, one of the factors is going to be cost, because therapeutic cannabis is not going to be inexpensive. I mean, each of the alternative treatment centers is required to have a plan as to how they'll make therapeutic cannabis affordable to certain types of limited income people. But, you know, that's going to be that's going to be an issue. There's also in the statute certain prohibitions around where it can be used. And
because, you know, hospitals get federal funding a lot of the time, so they may not want to touch this.
Yeah. And, insurance companies aren't going to cover it.
I was going to ask you that.
This is basically going to be a cash business, or a cash and hopefully debit card business. So, yeah, there definitely are some practical challenges that we're going to face as we implement this program.
And I know there's a meeting of doctors today, I think, right, on this issue as to how they as physicians work with this. Is that right, John?
I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm going to be there. It's being put on by the New Hampshire Medical Society. It's a therapeutic cannabis symposium. The target audience is the treatment providers who will be doing the certifications for potentially qualifying patients. I think it's going to be a really good program. And one of the challenges as well is that a lot of people, including providers, don't know a whole lot about therapeutic cannabis. You know, I myself, knew very little about it when I first became involved with this program. I went to a symposium back in November up at Dartmouth Hitchcock, and that was wonderful. I learned a tremendous amount about this. And so I think the more educational opportunities we have, particularly for the providers who could potentially do the certifications for patients, you know, the more education, the better. So I really applaud the New Hampshire Medical Society for putting on this program.
Well, and Senator Reagan, following up on this email from Elizabeth, and Elizabeth, I'm sorry to hear about your conditions, but following up on her concern about this sort of state-federal disconnect and where the hospitals fit in, here's another email on a similar vein from Douglas, who says, there will come a time when we have a government in Washington that enforces the federal laws. Someone will discover that there is a federal law against possession and sale of pot, and that all the state and local officials have all violated their mandatory oaths to, quote, support and defend the U.S. Constitution. Hence, they are all criminals. So here's someone else, Senator Reagan, kind of tapping into this difference we have between state law and federal law. And I wonder what you think.
So this is the purpose of federalism, is to allow the states to be the laboratories for change. And so this is what happened with states that wanted to try therapeutic cannabis. And the federal government allowed them to do it because that's the purpose of the states, is to try different things to find out what works best. And that's what they found out worked. It has working very well in a lot of states for very sick people. Back to what she said, the argument I used when I was in the House and sponsored the bill and was worried about the Senate, and I went and talked to three senators, and I said, I want you to understand something about a cancer patient. When you're a cancer patient, you're in the worst pain of your life, and you take a lot of opiates to dull the pain, which causes you to be constipated. So now you're in the worst pain of your life, and you can't go to the bathroom. So everybody may not have had cancer, but everybody's been constipated one time or another, and they know how uncomfortable that is. when you're in good health. So I was able to move two votes in the Senate, and we got it passed in the Senate. So that's one of the points, that's one of the blessings of the therapeutic use of cannabis for people in a lot of pain, that they don't have to use the opiates that do very bad things to us. So, and the medical profession, it's up to the doctors. They will hear from their patients. They will find out what works for what, and they'll lead the way on the use of cannabis, because it is such a blessing to people who are in tremendous amounts of pain.
Well, last question for you, Senator Reagan. When the legislature returns in January, how likely is it that lawmakers will tweak this legislation to address some of the concerns that have come up this hour? Or are you just going to leave it alone?
I haven't seen any proposals yet. I don't know what the House has to file their legislation earlier than the Senate. So I haven't had anyone approach me. And as yet, we don't know what might be necessary to move things along. But I will run for re-election just to get back here to make sure that we get this done and in control of the doctors.
And Dave, what trends or stories might you be watching as these dispensaries and cultivation centers and ID cards get up and running?
Well, I think nobody wants to see further delay, but if any of these appeals to the licensing process have legs, or if there's any call for further investigation in the legislature as to how the licenses were assigned, that will certainly have a significant impact in the program, and I'll be watching to see how those appeals progress.
All right. All of you, lots of information, real interesting. Thank you for being here. Dave Solomon, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Dave Solomon, reporter for the New Hampshire Union Leader and Sunday News. John Martin, good to have you. Thank you.
Totally my pleasure.
John Martin, manager of the Department of Health and Human Services Bureau of Licensing and Certification. And Senator Reagan, thank you also for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Senator John Reagan, a Republican from Deerfield, and as we heard, a sponsor of New Hampshire's medical marijuana bill. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.